This session is a session calling the Tree of Life, the oldest new symbol in the series on ecology and ethics. My name is Larry Rasmussen, and this series is one way to talk about the sacred and talk about the village theme for the summer, listening to the sacred. I want to begin actually with a poem from E.E. Cummings. It will be familiar to a number of you. I thank you, God, for most this amazing day, for the leaping greenly spirit of trees, and for a blue true dream of sky, and for everything which is natural, which is infinite, which is yes. I who have died am alive again today, and this is the sun's birthday. S-U-N, sun's birthday. This is the birthday of life and of love and the wings and of the gay great happening illimitably earth. How should tasting, touching, hearing, seeing, breathing, any, lifted from the know of all nothing, human, merely being, doubt unimaginable you? Capital Y. Now the ears of my ears awake, and now the eyes of my eyes are open. Well, if our time together, this next hour, is fortunate, we will have the ears of our ears awakened and the eyes of our eyes opened to see trees differently and to hear new life, indeed the sacred, from them. One of the themes in this series this week is that the massive threats to planetary life systems, the eco-crisis, is a revelatory event, in light of which we have to rethink, even reimagine most everything. Most everything includes our most familiar Christian symbols. It's also often a stark revelation, I'm going to contend today, of new life in old symbols. My example of new life in old symbols is the Tree of Life. But I want to begin with a question for all of you. Is the Tree of Life a major Christian symbol? Where is it, or what is it, in your own faith memory? Is it there? Is the Tree of Life a Christian symbol that you connect with? You're nodding yes. Is that so? What's the you're nodding no. What's the connection? What memory do you have, or what kind of place in Christian faith have you seen represented by the Tree of Life?
I guess I think of it in Revelation.
Uh-huh. What's the trouble with Holden Village? You have these people who actually you see, it never happens to me in the city. Nobody knows the Tree of Life, and they don't know their Bibles either.
Okay, what's it also in Genesis.
Our word. You mean the Bible begins with the Tree of Life and ends with the Tree of Life? Did you know that?
No.
The two images that come to mind are one Bible camp. Probably even here,
I mean,
they probably have a tree of life in the tree.
But
a Bible can't be plants
a
tree of life in the tree.
You're
out of the
connection
between.
See?
He thrives. And the other one really is the one that's sort of like totally removed from a real tree, and that's the process, the tree of life.
Oh. Huh.
Did you all, have you all associated with cross, the cross with the tree of life?
Oh, no. It's hard to, for me, to disconnect my scholarly knowledge from.
Yeah.
No,
well, you're too far gone.
Exactly.
It's a false case. But he's not me.
But that's the whole tradition, is that the cross is made from the wood of the tree of life. And you see that in all sorts of medieval art. The other thing is that if you have an old Lutheran Bible and you look on the front page, it'll show the tree of life dead on one side and blooming on the other.
See, I'm a Lutheran. I've been a marinated Lutheran all my life. And I never seen that.
All right. It's in the Lutheran Bible, and I think in subsequent ones, and it indicates the dead side is that because the people have turned away on the
side.
I see.
Do you have a
No.
That's the key. That's what things are always like. That's the key.
Oh. Well, I'm actually quite flabbergasted at how many connections in this small group there are with the Tree of Life in the Christian, specifically from many Lutheran traditions, because most people would not regard it a major Christian symbol, and many, many people would not even think of it as a minor Christian symbol.
In Quaker?
So, all right. Well, I came across it several times, but one of the most moving times was exactly this time last year. I was at the Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro, the largest international gathering of nations, and the subject was the threat to life on the planet. And there were two real locations of the Earth Summit. One was a huge international conference center where the national delegations and the heads of state met to do the treaty processes. And then the other was Flamingo Park, downtown Rio, where there was a kind of world's fair of environmental organizations. That was called the Global Forum. And there were about 5,000 or 6,000 different groups from around the world, all non-government, who were showing us what they were doing to protect the life. And so it was educational programs, and it was informational in other ways. Thank you. At the center of the Global Forum, which had no national flags anywhere, unlike the conference center, which was all identified by national flags, there was only one symbol at the Global Forum, and it was at the center. It was the Tree of Life. And there were messages on it, and then there was a large area nearby around it. People made pilgrimages to the Tree of Life. We did from our conference. We wrapped it in bright colored ribbons, the trunk, and danced around it, and such things went on there. And then there were boards posted down below to receive the messages from children all over the world. Each message was cut like a leaf from that kind of construction paper we used to get in grade school, you know, and posted there because there wasn't any more room on the Tree of Life. So you had, it seemed like, millions of messages from the children. This was, in the words of Rumsfeld, our country, the planet. This is the symbol. So that was one impression of the Tree of Life. I just want to mention a few others.
Larry, how did it get to be used that way there? Was it something?
Good question.
Explicitly out of the book of the people of the book tradition, at least three of the world's religions sharing that or something?
Actually, the Tree of Life is maybe the most universal of all religious symbols. The only competitor it has is the Holy Mountain. The Holy Mountain and the Tree of Life are the most universal and probably the oldest religious symbols. If you wanted to pick two symbols that would be universal, those are the two you'd pick. So it was there because so many cultures and traditions have the Tree of Life. Let me just give you a quick example. East Africa has places where there are trees which are designated as sacred trees. That's where the community gathers to do community business and also to commune with the great creator. If you go to West Africa and you go to Cameroon, the sore, which is a small tree, more bush-like than a tree, the leaves of the sore tree are used for rites of reconciliation when there's been some serious conflict in the community and now the elders have decided that it's time to get things patched up. The leaves of the sore tree are for the healing of the peoples. Now I want to go back to this, your first observation that you knew about the tree of life from Revelation. Then the angel showed me the river of the water of life, bright as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb of God through the middle of the street of the city. On either side of the river is the tree of life. This is the New Jerusalem now. With its 12 kinds of fruit, producing the fruit each month. And the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nation. So the tree of life produces nourishment for the peoples and redemption, healing, reconciliation, healing of the nations. So the sore tree in West Africa, the leaves are for the healing of the nations. In Greek, the word for it gets translated as nations is ethnoi, people, ethnic groups. If you took a flight, as you can, from Douala, Cameroon to Athens, Greece, and made your way up the Acropolis, which is itself now literally dissolving from air pollution, that is the marble temple up there. You'd go through nice pine on the way up, but when you got to the top, you would find that it's barren, except there's one olive tree there that sits out there by a little bit of a stone structure. And the legend has it that the goddess Athena planted that olive tree there, the old olive tree. And it is the branch from the olive tree, which is our symbol, from that olive tree, which is our symbol of peace, the olive branch. The leaves of the tree for the healing of the nation. Now you got to go back and read your Bible, because you check out the story of the flood. All creation suffers in the Hebrew account because of the earth suffers because of human unrighteousness. It's this thing, difficult thing for the Hebrews to figure out, but they think there's some connection between social injustice and the earth suffering. So already by the 10th generation, namely Noah, God needs to, in effect, start this story over one more time and see if we can do better the next time. Because creation is violated, and thus the flood. Now, how do we know whether any life has survived this mass death? How does Noah know? Well, Noah sends a dove. Dove comes back empty beaked, right? First time. Noah sends the dove out the second time. What is the result? Come on, folks.
Brings back the olive branch.
Bible camp. brings back olive branch in her beak. Life has survived death. There's a tree of life out there somewhere. That's how we know that creation is not undone. And so Noah sends this dove out. Now, I don't know if you remember the third part of this. Most people are so relieved, you know, to the human beings think about their own interests. You know, where do we go from here? Well, out the boat. And don't get the rest. The rest of the story is the dove flies the third time and doesn't return. That's how Noah knows it's all right to put in the port here. She's nested in a tree of life. She's home. It's all right. Let me scatter around here with this theme of the tree of life as both nourishment and redemption or the healing of the nations, or between those two, you're really talking about the wholeness of creation, both abundance and healing, wholeness.
Mark, Larry, I just mentioned that the association, that's also the end of that, after the dove goes off on her third trip, that's when God lifts the curse on the land and enters into the Noahic covenant even though human beings will be wicked, God will...
Which is the first covenant, and which is the covenant with all creation.
Right, with all creation.
Go back and read Genesis 9. I make a covenant with you and all of the creatures of the earth. Yeah, good point. See? All right. I want to go back to your point or your question about why at Rio de Janeiro the Tree of Life was chosen as the symbol for this conference, and my point that it's most everywhere, the symbol. But let me broaden it to just the notion that trees are important creatures and communicate to us important things, including the sacred. And I'm just going to flip through some things here quickly so that I can get back to the biblical account and we can discuss that. From Walking Buffalo, Stony Indian Nation. Do you know that trees talk? Well, they do. They talk to each other, and they'll talk to you if you'll listen. Trouble is, white people don't listen. They never learn to listen to the Indians. Now listen to this. So I don't suppose they'll learn to listen to other voices in nature either. Did you get that?
Yeah.
We are among the voices in nature. That is, he's saying Indians in this case. If they didn't listen to the Indians, they're probably not going to listen to other voices in nature. But I have learned a lot from trees. Sometimes about the weather, sometimes about animals, sometimes about the Great Spirit. While Walking Buffalo said that, white people were cutting down and cutting up old-growth redwoods, still are, some of which were older than Christianity. From the Mayan language, this is a Mayan adage, proverb, if you will, who cuts the trees as he pleases cuts short his own life. Now, I'm told by the good people at National Geographic that this is interesting because the same word in Mayan is used for both blood and sap.
Can I say one thing about that?
Yeah.
The Mayan civilization fell because of over.
So that's where maybe this adage came from.
Because of over what?
Over cutting and
exhaustion. This is the history of civilization. As we do the history of environment now, we're going to find more and more evidence that the history of civilization is the history of exhausting the natural base, resource base. There's lots of evidence, even the Roman Empire. From Rabbi Natan, I don't know the date on this. If you have a sapling in your hand and they tell you that the Messiah has arrived, first plant the sapling and then go out to greet him. A little ambivalence about whether the Messiah is going to really be the Messiah. So you better plan in the future. It's a little bit like Martin Luther, you know, it's apocryphal, like maybe, I don't know.
It's apocryphal.
Martin Luther, who expected the world to end quite soon, and maybe within his own lifetime, was asked, what would you do if tomorrow brought the day of judgment? And Luther's reply was, I'd plant a tree. So if you think the Messiah's coming, first plant the sapling, then go out to greet the Messiah. Lila and I especially enjoy, as probably many of you do, the Southwest, and we have a St. Francis figure at home, carved by Senor Lopez. We didn't get one of Senor Lopez's other carvings, which are common figure in the Southwest. This cottonwood that's filled with absolutely everything. All of the branches are totally filled with people, birds, etc. I mean, it's a tree just full of life. That picture of a crowded cottonwood filled with all manner of life, fruits, vegetables, I mean, anything can go in the tree there and does, is a common symbol in the Southwest. Among the peoples indigenous to the Southwest and also to Mexicans across the border. The Iroquois Confederacy pictures planet Earth as held together by the gently encompassing roots of the Tree of Life. And it's a very common religious symbol that the Tree of Life stands at the axis of the world or represents four directions. That's another thing with branches and up and down. The Ogallala Sioux have a vision in which a lifelong search for the Tree of Life is the central quest. Now, the Tree of Life is located at the intersection of the red road where life begins and the black road where life ends. It has to be watered there in order to save Earth Mother. If the roots of the tree of salvation wither, so will Earth Mother. So the human quest is to find the tree of life at the intersection between where life begins and life ends, and to nurture it there for the sake of Earth. Oaks sacred to Zeus at Dodona, laurels sacred to Apollo at Delphi were associated with the divine oracles and with wisdom. Trees have always been associated with divinities as well. The olives of Artemis, the myrtles of Aphrodite. In the Nordic world, the cosmic ash tree Yggdrasil was said, like the Iroquois tree, to fasten the world about its roots. Our son Andy, for a Halloween costume one year, decided to be Yggdrasil. Can you imagine how difficult it is to make a tree as your costume? Anyway, it was not a bad choice in retrospect. The god Odin hung 9 days and nights from the great world ash to attain enlightenment, and for Buddhists, the Bodhi tree is fixed at the world's axis, and it's under the Bodhi tree that Prince Siddhartha became the Buddha, attained wisdom, enlightenment. When Nyla and I were at a peace gathering in Los Alamos on Hiroshima Day, August 6th, some years ago, a Native American dancer danced his prayer against the powers of death. And he shared his praying against the powers of death by giving each of us in silence a simple, small, green branch. A branch is a symbol of life. Okay, let me, I got a bunch of other stuff here, but let me finish these samples with my favorite. The passage by Alice Walker from The Color Purple, the passage that gave that book its title. Shug is explaining to Celie how it was that she, Shug, got rid of God as the white old man, the picture of God, how that happened. Shug say, my first step from the white old man was trees. then air, then birds, then other people. Interesting procession. But one day when I was sitting quiet and feeling like a motherless child, which I was, it come to me, that feeling of being part of everything, not separate at all. I knew that if I cut a tree, my arm would bleed. And I laughed and I cried and I run all around the house. I just knew what it was. Later, Shirk say, listen, God love everything you love and a mess of stuff you don't. It's a marvelous. It's a wonderful. But more than anything else, God love admiration. You saying God vain, I asked? Nah, she say, not vain, just wanting to share a good thing. I think it pisses God off if you walk by the color purple in a field somewhere and don't notice it. Well, the reason this old, old universal symbol is now the newest symbol, the Earth summit, is because the Tree of Life has been trashed, and the Earth is dying by slow increments. And we then revive such powerful symbols in protest against the death of life itself. All right, and just a couple of things to get back to a discussion of this as a Christian symbol. And then I want April. I want you to tell your story about the Franciscan sisters and what they did when you were elected bishop. Do that right now, will you?
Right now?
Yeah. Or you want to hear about Jesus?
You want to hear the tree part, or the first part, and then the tree, or what do you want?
I'll go first.
After I was elected bishop, and the office was in the Rochester convent, that's where the synod office was, and so they, about 200 sisters live in that place, and they had a worship service, and they used, I think it's St. Clair's, the Francis's, you know, and they had a blessing of St. Clair, and they extended their hands in this beautiful blessing of worship service. And then we went outside, and they planted a tree in the courtyard. They call it the Bishop's Corner there.
Uh-huh.
and they said, trees, welcome this tree. And when you walk by, and they said, also when you walk by, greet this tree. And we got some water out and sprayed it as almost kind of a baptismal water. And then I've had many letters now from them telling me how beautiful the tree is and how it's awesome.
It's a wonderful story. It's also very biblical in a different sense, because a tree, not now necessarily the tree of life, but a tree is very often the image of steadfastness, of faithfulness. Jeremiah says, if only you were like trees, you know, you stiff-necked, backsliding people. Just put you on your roots and do your things and be steadfast in what you're called to do.
You cannot be moved.
Yeah, that's the kind of image there. But I want to go back to the very beginning here and pick this up and ask whether it's a major Christian symbol or not, and if it isn't, whether it should be. And it was interesting in your discussion, April, the other day, where we looked at the Genesis story and we were going at it. You made a comment along the way about what we were going to attend to, the subject for the day, and that we weren't going to stop with to focus on the tree. And there God put the earth creatures down that God had formed. And out of Adama, out of the ground, God made every tree to grow that is pleasant to the sight and good for food. The tree of life also in the midst of the garden, and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Now, which tree is right smack in the middle of the garden?
Tree of life.
Yes, not the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. I think a lot of us, you know, have lived without even knowing that this was the tree. That other tree has gotten all the press. I have a theory that that attention being diverted from the tree of life is itself the fall. That the fall is not listening to God and not paying attention to trees. Tree of life and the tree of knowledge of good and evil.
What,
April?
How can you?
In Genesis 3, cherubs with flaming swords guard the tree of life. In the midst of Eden, from the return of those distrusting and now expelled human beings. Gotta protect life. That's the most important creature in the garden. That's the one we can't live without. The others can even be expelled, but that one you've got to protect.
Wait, it says here to guard the way to the tree of life.
Yeah, all right. To guard the way to the tree of life. Yeah, the cherubs protect them from going back to the tree of life.
No. So it's a barrier, not a turning a passage that would allow people to.
Well, that would be an interesting variation on this. It would be worth looking at.
Person, someone opening up their Bible. No, I know.
I've always regretted this new hermeneutic, which allows more than one right reading.
As long as they're guarding it differently than the gate up on the table.
That's right.
To the landfill.
That's right. In the little book Creation and Fall, Dietrich Bonhoeffer begins a chapter which is interestingly titled The Middle of the Earth, by asking how we can speak of the earth except in the language of mythology, and then he comments on the Genesis text that he's exegeting by saying, entirely within the framework of this picture of Eden, it is related how humanity was put into this garden in order to live in it, and how two trees occupied the middle of the garden, one the tree of life, the other the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And then Bonhoeffer says, and upon these two trees, the destiny of humankind is to be decided. End of quotation. Bonhoeffer adds, why cannot we understand that God must reach toward us with these ancient magical pictures, as well as our technical conceptual pictures, if we would become wise? As Mark indicated, in medieval manuscripts and frescoes and paintings, very often, two famous trees, in the Christian ones now, two famous trees appear together, the tree of knowledge and the tree of life, tree of knowledge of good and evil. The former is often emblematic of the fall, tree of knowledge of good and evil, while the latter is the living green sign of redemption. Tree of life is a sign of redemption in medieval Christianity. Most of us, I think, have forgotten that this tree of life is maybe the most important creature in Eden, and the leaves are for the healing of the nations, and the fruit is then for our nourishment. Now, I just want to quickly mention to you some things from Ramphal about trees. This is the book that I think is the best accessible account of what happening to the planet, both in terms of what is happening to nature and also what the social issues are, social, political, economic issues are out of that. Now I'm looking at page 65, where he starts with a Native American legend. It goes like this. The sky is held up by the trees. If the forest disappears, the sky, which is the roof of the earth, collapses. Nature and humankind then perish together. That's the legend. Well, Ramfeller goes on to say, you know, this is the language of myth. But it's literally true. It is the case. If you got rid of all of the trees, or let's say all of the green plants, I mean, they've got all the chlorophyll. Every breath that you and I have taken, from the time we emerge from the womb until the time we get planted under the trees, is utterly and totally dependent upon trees and other green plants. You can't breathe without those. There would not be the breath of life. It's that interchange of oxygen and carbon dioxide. So it's quite the case that the sky would fall and we and nature would perish together. Trees breathe in carbon dioxide and store it, acting as carbon reservoirs or sinks. Language and ecology now. As such, they are invaluable agents in keeping the level of carbon in the atmosphere stable. As forests, whether in the Tongass or in the tropics, are destroyed, especially by burning, carbon dioxide is released into the air, adding to the stock of greenhouse gases that are now warming our planet and changing its climate. That is to say, we're changing the atmosphere these days. That's the problem. We're putting in huge numbers in terms of tonnage of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. Trees are the main way of storing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. If you burn the rainforest or the Tongass forest in Alaska, which is even larger than the rainforest, if you burn those things or strip them or deforest them, you don't have the carbon dioxide sinks. You're just putting it up there. More of it will stay up there and won't be recycled. So it's true, it's holding up the sky. Forest land, so climate is dependent upon the trees. They are trees of life. Forest land is also the world's main storehouse of species, of the myriad kinds of plants, animals, birds, and insects with which Earth is blessed. So you have the sky and you have the species are both dependent upon trees. Now there are a few other things too. As I mentioned, forests have crucial roles in the carbon, nitrogen, and oxygen cycles that nourish and sustain life on Earth. They protect the watersheds that support farming and influence rainfall and climate. They save the soil from erosion. They are home to most of the world's species. They are home as well to hundreds of thousands of forest peoples whose lives, and not just livelihoods, depend on an environment in which they have learned to live in harmony. They supply timber for construction, pulp for paper, ingredients for medicine, raw materials for industrial products. They provide fuel for cooking in half the world's homes. One of the planet's life-sustaining assets, forests are now disappearing too fast for our own comfort or safety. Okay, I will finish with what you have already referred to, having made the case, I hope, that trees are themselves always the trees of life. Let me insert one poem, though, from a 10-year-old. It's called The Last Tree, and this is a Connecticut fifth grader, Charles M. Flick. The kids know something about this. The last tree. This scene is not pretty, not pretty at all. No one really cares, no one, big or small. The rivers are dirty and the buildings are tall. The last tree is dying. dying, that's all. Fishes and birds can't live at all. They're tearing down the playground to make room for a mall. The sun is crying raindrops, raindrops big and small, and the last tree is dying, dying, that's all. The clouds are smoke and gray and black. No one is cleaning up, no one with a sack. No one is cleaning the water, the air, and the ground. We cannot live, and now we are bound, for the last tree is dying, dying, that's all.
Pretty good.
It's a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
All right. And the angel showed me the river of the water of life, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb through the middle of the city, street of the city. Also on either side of the river, the tree of life with its 12 kinds of fruit, yielding its fruit each month, and the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations. The Bible begins in the garden and ends in the city, where nature and God and humankind will live together in harmony. And both places, in the middle, is the tree of life. There is no temple in Eden, and there is no temple in Jerusalem, New Jerusalem. There is the throne of God and the tree of life and the rivers of life. Now, I think it may be crazy John the Seer's problem. He's living alone on Patmos. The sun is terribly hot. He has no, what is it, the number? 15? The sun, no suntan lotion, sunblock, and prison and exile and the burning sun have gotten to him. So he ends the book of Revelation. I read you from the beginning of the last chapter, which is 22. The end of the last chapter, John warns people about against anybody messing with his text. This is an outrageously jealous author. He finishes the last verses of the last book of the Bible with a severe warning to those who would any way alter this text about New Jerusalem and this vision of crystal waters and the fruits of the trees of life. If anyone takes away from the words of the book of this prophecy, God will what? Take away that person's share in what? You've got your Bible. You're cheating.
She's got the Bible. Cheating.
All right, read 22:19. The person share
if
in...
takes words away from this book of prophecy, God will take away from him his share in the tree of life and in the holy city which I described in this book.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Whoa. If you want to be in real big trouble, mess with the tree of life and the holy city. That's it. That's the ultimate judgment. Now, we're out of time. I have enjoyed this book by Tikva Primorkensky, In the Wake of the Goddesses, on Women, Culture, and the Biblical Transformation of Pagan Myth, so much. And one of the chapters, which I don't have time to explicate now, is a chapter in here about Asherah and abundance. Asherah is both a Canaanite goddess associated with nourishment and fertility and abundance, who is banished, or who loses out to the male god. But Asherah is also the word for tree. And in the cultic life of Israel, which said no to goddess religion, they retained beside the altar an Asherah, a cultic tree. And there's a wonderful chapter in here about the place of this tree of life in ancient Judaism. and the battles it has with monotheism. Because when the liturgical reforms come around in the name of a pure monotheism, they get rid of all of these things, including altar, hill, tree, and a megalith. It's very interesting to me that ancient Israel wants to worship, in the words of the prophet now, and Jeremiah is complaining, on every lofty hill and under every green tree, holy mountain and tree of life. Well, the claim that Asherah survives and the symbol of Asherah, even as a goddess, is in clay figurines, which you see here, which are found in Israel, which have no signs whatsoever of divinity. There's no royal crown, there's no headdress, there are none of the signs, symbols of divine power here. But these are, according to Primer Kensky, they're found in the cultic sites where the preparation of food and eating and drinking was an important part of worship. And she says that these figurines are tree-like. That if you look at the base, from the waist on down, it's trunk. It's flared at the bottom. It's even marked like that. And that you have, in ancient Israel, now, no longer goddess worship, but retaining the Asherah beside the altar and the figurine in the worship place, in which you have a tree with breasts. This is a picture of nourishment. This is the tree of life. Can't live without it.
Larry, you seem to be working from a manuscript and part of this. Have you published this, or are you about to
publish this? No, I preached a sermon on the tree of life. Yeah. You didn't hear the punchline of the sermon, because I'm not preaching now. If I were, however, it would be that I think not only is the fall not listening to God, not paying attention to trees, but that Golgotha is the place of dead trees. And that there is good reason why the second century Christians called the cross the tree of life. That from this place, which is a garbage dump at the edge of the city, outside the gates, beyond salvation, that from this place of dead trees, new life. And they hanged him on a tree, in the way it's put in Acts. So that's another thing. Celsus complains of this, a Greek philosopher who ridicules Christians. He says they're absolutely mad, these Christians. They call this cross the tree of life. I started with Rio, and I'll end with the World Council of Churches session in Canberra. One of the sessions that Nana and I went to was one in which women from around the world told the stories of their struggles and finding God in the midst of their struggles. And there's a Palestinian and a South African and a Russian, and I don't recall all of them, but each one told her story. And after she told her story, she took her green branch and she went over to an area which was center back stage, and there was a large wooden structure line down on the stage, and she fit the green branch into this wood structure. And then at the end, after all the women had told their stories of struggle and struggle for life, and they all together went over and they raised this wooden structure. And it was a cross, become a tree of life with the branches that they had put there. And it was deeply, deeply moving, both in their stories and in this way of symbolizing death to life, death and life. But it turned out that it was from a 3rd century Armenian Orthodox liturgy that they got the idea. And I have this is not my sermon now. This is another thesis. I have a thesis that since the Industrial Revolution, we are theologically autistic about hearing, seeing the sacred in nature. We can't relate to that world. We're encapsulated in a world that has rendered us unable to relate to that. That's what I mean by theological autistic. So we don't even think about putting together a liturgy which draws, like the pre-industrial ones did. That same Armenian Orthodox liturgy, or that same tradition, at the beginning of the spring, when the farmers went out to sow the seed, had a liturgy called the washing of the cross. And you took the cross and you pulled the cross through a container of water. And then you sprinkled the water, like taking the branches and blessing you, sprinkled the water for the purposes of fertility. That connection between the cross is a place where death was defeated, and life, and the tree of life is the cross itself, so you sprinkle the water. I think we're theologically autistic in exactly the same way about water itself. So we don't make connections between baptism and the waters of life around us, polluted or pure, or the waters of the womb. I mean, all kinds of connections with water that we could have, but we spiritualized it so out of sight that we just don't work in a way in which. And so we're surprised when we go back and find out that the tree of life has been a major Christian symbol, because we can't connect with trees or other creatures of nature.
In fact, we sentimentalize it when we do.
That's true.
We really do.
It's well, for recreation or inspiration. It's for poetry and hymns, but doesn't hold up the sky for heaven's sakes.
George has an old aunt who, when she comes to our house in the woods, hugs the trees.
Does she?
86 years old, and she takes her cane and she takes all the leaves.
So
that she can see what's coming up under the leaves. Uh-huh. And she is restored by doing that. She lives at Augustana Home in the center of Minneapolis. Yeah. And she wants to go alone. Uh-huh. And we let her. I mean, even if she falls over, it's probably one place to fall. No, but she hugs the trees. We have a picture of her doing this. And now I have started. I hug the trees.
Yeah, do you?
Yes, okay. I do.
All right, well.
Sure.
Pejoratively, environmentalists are called in this area tree huggers, and it may be like some other things, like the word Protestant was usually used by opponents to describe people.
Yeah, well, Christians wasn't exactly.
No, it was not exactly a
tag for those people.
Our church takes the cross that we have at Lent, and then and we put flowers. We flower it completely, cover it, and have it up there for Easter.
Yeah.
The same thing you see in Good Friday, you see.
Yeah.
Now,
flowering
his life.
Nice. The kids do that in our congregation, put daffodils in the cross while the offertory is being taken.
There's a book in the store I just noticed before I came here called The Legend of the Three Trees, children's picture book.
Oh.
And it's really even. Pretty powerful.
What is it?
It has these three trees who start like little star twinkles, just barely out of the soil, and how they grow, what their aspirations are. They each have an aspiration. One is to be become wood for a precious treasure box. Another, a second is to be wood for a sailing ship to discover new lands. Okay. And the third is to stay put and be the tallest
tree in the forest and always point to God. And woodcutters come for us. They're pretty grim characters. And they come and cut the trees down with no regard for what they're going to be. And the trees are quite surprised to discover that they don't turn out. The one becomes just a feed box, and the second becomes just a fishing boat, not a, and the third is just lumber. You can't see where this is going. And so then, of course, the feed box is the manger, and the fishing boat is the disciples walking on water, and the lumber is the cross. And they each fulfill their destiny. The third always points to God.
Nice.
Wow, that's great.
I was walking on the road to the ballpark the other night, and I noticed there's, right along the side on the left, there's a clump of kind of dead trees, and one of them is broken. There's a branch on it that's broken, so it's like this, and it forms a perfect cross.
I was really struck by that. At the base, there's all these new ferns. Is there anyone in this group, or do you have anyone in the village who's working in communities in the Northwest here that, I mean, I start thinking, you know, we're doing all this, you know, the tree cutter down is not the good person in the story, but, you know, let's face it, around here, they were out of my background, you know, the Norwegians might have been farming in Iowa, but a lot of them out here
I don't know if we have loggers, for example, in the village now.
People whose congregations had that as a major economic.
Well, that would be a good forum sometimes to pick up some of these issues where it's a real conflict.
Because I think it's a tough.
Yeah.
I don't know, I saw a video about this just a few months ago, and it struck me that the testimony of the logging people, primarily men who've been real, you know, were angry about lots of things because they're out of jobs and things, but at the bottom of what seemed to affect them most about losing their jobs in an industry that was about cutting down trees and over what it lived there, was it? They wanted to be out in the woods. Mm-hmm. And it was they didn't want to work at other jobs that wouldn't allow them to be out in the woods, that they were in the middle of cutting down. It was very strange, and I understand that a bit because having worked in the logging crews here at Holton, it's it's my favorite thing to do at Holton, and it's the most painful and difficult because it is very affecting. Even working with the fallen wood, because the disruption to the forest floor that you do as you try to get the wood out and up to where you can cut it is so profoundly violent.
Yeah,
it's very, very hard to take almost psychically. I love to do that.
The additional irony of it is that really the argument is over the last 10% of any full growth forest. Yeah. So it's a delay. Only a delay in the extinction of the whole system.
Yeah, in Rio de Janeiro, the other countries were so angry with the United States and the efforts. Well, this is all very complicated as these things get to be, but our pleading for a set of forest principles which would protect the rainforest, which sounds on the right side of that one. But at the same time we were doing that, we were cutting down the Tongass forest in Alaska, which is the largest temperate rainforest in the world, and which is a larger carbon dioxide sink than is the Amazon.
I hadn't even heard about that.
Yes. Furthermore, the Tongass, which is government, T-O-N-G-A-S-S, T-O-N-G-A-S-S, Tongass forest in Alaska, which is government land, was subsidizing, still is, the cutting of the Tongass forest, so that the companies were cutting at 50 cents a log, is what they were.